Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, my chair's broken. It's going to make some sound during this recording. Are we ready? Hey!
Hey, there's a click. All right. Are you going to do that thing where you like float up and down because of the height of the chair? I don't know.
I found like a piece of metal on the floor the other day that's clearly from the chair, and I could not find where to put it back, and I thought it was okay. It appears to not be okay, but I'll get a new chair. It's going to be all right.
I'm sitting on the Aeron chair, which for anyone who a lot of people love the Aeron chair, the Herman Miller. The hack that you need to do is go find an office that has like laid off their whole office, and they're just like giving away or selling for very cheap these used Aeron chairs. And I'm sitting in one that's probably well over 10 or 15 years old, and it's like, it's amazing. These things like don't wear and tear. And it's I've tried all the chairs, all of them.
Yeah.
I've tried the expensive ones, the cheaper ones. I've bought them. I've returned them. I come back to this, and it works the best on my back and posture and all that.
So Brian says the Aeron is worth it. Okay.
Yeah. But you can get it for like $300 or $400. You don't have to spend $1,000 for it new. Like, they are literally just as good used.
Yeah. That's good to know. And unfortunately, there are still companies going out of business these days.
Yep.
I don't think things are going to get easier anytime soon. This, my chair, is from the Carthook office in Portland. It's just like a little IKEA conference room chair, but I love it. It's so simple.
My previous chair was just like that, like very low back, like easy to recline.
Just
back.
A good shape. Yep.
All right. So what's now that we've got our posture talk out of the way, let's...
Yeah, you know.
So what do we got going on today? I thought this week I would start to be a bit more open about everything that I've like been planning and plotting. And I think part of the stress that I've had was like not being public about stuff. So I'm just going to go public with everything that I've been planning and like piecing together for my 2024 and everything. Because I always find that like I could tweak things in private. I could share them with a few friends in private, but you don't really know what's what until you put it out there and get feedback from a larger group of folks, but especially like potential, buyers for a new thing. So I'm up to that point now where it's like, okay, I could stop like tweaking and just start putting it out there and then work from there and learn,
Great. Hopefully that feels liberating, and not having to hold things back.
Yeah,
and then so, get some feedback. Hell yeah!
I'll just get into it if you don't mind.
I do not.
So I've been talking about Clarity Flow a lot, and of course that's going to continue. We have no plans to slow down our efforts there. Got a bunch of good things cooking right now that are frankly just taking longer than I was hoping. Like our Clarity Flow commerce feature is still in the works. I'm hoping sometime this month. We've got some marketing stuff, some like onboarding stuff that I'm trying to ship. But bigger picture, I've talked about this in the last few weeks. Like it Clarity Flow is on its own runway. And in order to keep Clarity Flow sort of sustaining long term, like beyond its current financial runway, I'm gonna need to figure something else out. And I've already kind of ruled out the idea of raising more. I'm just not interested in that for multiple reasons, and I just don't think it's super wise at this point. So I need to find other ways to sustain myself and sort of stay in the game, but also ways to find to keep Clarity Flow running long term without the urgency of it like getting through its limited financial runway.
It sounds to me like all you're really doing is shifting from a single bet approach to a portfolio approach.
That's well
resources, put. Yep. Time, attention, all this stuff. It's really like managing a portfolio of efforts as opposed to a single effort.
That's exactly it. You articulated that perfectly, because when I think strategically about things like this, getting, if you rise above the products themselves and this metric or that metric, or what you can do to improve conversions on this or that, or whatever tactic. If you rise above all that, you have to, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to think like an investor. You have to think about, like, is this like continuing my investment in at the level that I'm currently putting at risk? Because I'm not only putting like dollars in terms of like literally money from our savings into this business to sustain it. There's definitely that, but it's also years of my career. That's the other thing that you're that's actually different from investors. If you're the entrepreneur, if you're the founder, you are betting years of your career to make a business happen.
Yeah.
And when
you have fewer bets that way.
Yeah. And you know, there's all sorts of ways to be successful in this you know, career path as a founder, right? And I feel like I've had a few wins. I've had plenty of challenges, plenty of fails. But I'm at the point now where, or like 3 years in, like I'm still very motivated to hold and run and improve Clarity Flow long term. And we're going to continue doing that and giving it its small team the resources that it has, keeping that going for as long as it can sustain. But I'm at this point, 3 years in, like my calculation on my personal investment has come to like a fork in the road where it's like, I can't give it all. I can't be personally all in on this specific one singular SaaS idea, you know? You know, it just didn't grow as much as I would have hoped by this point in its timeline, you know? So that's going to be sort of like downgraded to sort of a side business for a while in more of a portfolio approach. And the main thing that I need to get back to is like getting back to my roots of like bootstrapping, self-funding, like a profit first mindset type of business. And, you know, that is going to have to mean like not starting another SaaS business as like the main thing to try to depend on and build a profitable thing. So I thought I could share a little bit about, I shared this link with you. I passed it around to some folks in DMs this morning. It's at, the site is instrumentalproducts.com. And this is basically the start of a new, I guess I'd call it just a new brand that I'll be developing over the foreseeable future into 2024. In a nutshell, or in like a one-liner, and this is really needs like development over time as it starts to come together, but I describe it as this is going to be about product strategy for non-technical and semi-technical founders. So if we start there in terms of the focus, like this whole brand and company and product line around, you know, from this brand called that I'm calling Instrumental Products, it's going to be about like, you know, helping founders with product strategy. And so the one of the priorities here is like it has to be like fast to start generating revenue and profit, right? So it's going to start out with a coaching offer, and what you'll see on instrumentalproducts.com is basically the first offer from this brand, which is my coaching offer. Like I'm actually, for the first time in a while, I'm going to open myself up for some private one-on-one coaching with some founders. And I mean, you can sort of see how I laid it out there. I'm toying with different ideas on structure on this coaching thing. I actually have one client right now and a second call coming up. And then, you know, if I can bring in a few more, there's going to be like limited spots that I can take on, but it's going to be mostly asynchronous coaching. Obviously we're going to be using Clarity Flow for that. There's going to be an option where I'll be available for live sessions, either with you or even include me with your team. But I'm sort of hesitating even calling it coaching, because I think of it more like I can sort of plug in and collaborate with you and or your team on your product. So that can mean strategic planning on the product. That can mean technical design, architecture, planning, helping to make these like product decisions for your business. And if I'm working with like a non-technical founder, I'm someone who I'm full stack. Like I'm a product person. I can build full stack, and I'm a founder. So I can take these like technical product considerations and help to make business decisions off of those, or maybe find shortcuts, find faster ways to bring a product or bring a feature to market. Mapping customer needs to actual features and, you know, shaping up roadmaps and things like that. That would be like one general area where I can offer value. The other one would actually be getting sort of helping to like get my hands dirty in the actual design, the code, the UI, the architecture. Not necessarily like being assigned projects or tickets or things to deliver on that end, but I can help to coach, advise. If you're trying to learn how to code and make the transition that I did, I can be the coach or advisor in that whole journey, which I really benefited from when I was learning. And, you know, just helping people kind of like bootstrap and build their SaaS. So like there's sort of two focuses there, but the one that I've laid out in terms of the coaching is more of like the strategy. And anyway, that's like phase one. Like that's like the, you know, cause it, like the fastest way to start earning revenue would just be go like direct.
Straightforward.
Service, some sort of like coaching, advising service, right?
Right. Handful of customers.
Yeah.
Get to know them, get to know the product, get to know the team, add value.
Yep.
And right. I assume you don't want to turn that into like a cohort of coaching. Like that might be later on, but this is one-on-one.
Yeah, I think this is more like, I wouldn't call it temporary. I think this will be sort of some form of a long-term offer from this entity that I'm starting. Mm-hmm. But the coaching specifically, it's not like I'm trying to grow a productized service around this that will grow with a team. This is more of just like a step one in the evolution of what I'm looking to build here. The other big piece that I'm thinking a lot about right now, and I want to start taking action on as soon as I can, probably in January, is just getting back to audience growth and building like a creator type business.
And what you see that as directly linked as part of like a value ladder?
Yeah.
With this, right? Like different entry points where free content, then something smaller, then something asynchronous, and then ultimately...
Yeah. So coaching offer is really A, just to sort of bring revenue in the door, but B, to start to really help founders. And also for me to learn a lot about just, I think there's a lot of things that I can learn by becoming like embedded in other people's product companies. So that's like the raw material, the early revenue generator, right? But then the audience growth is really about getting back into the mindset of like taking that seriously. I've sort of like backed off from audience growth the last several years. It hasn't been important to me as much as I was focused on SaaS. I think now if I can build this like audience driven business, which is sort of like my roots, what I did years ago with like the productized course and whatnot. Now heading into 2024, I'm actually thinking a lot more about YouTube and going hard in that direction, putting a lot more effort into video-based content. YouTube has been something that I've been interested in for a long time. And the last few years, I thought about starting, like getting serious about growing a YouTube channel, but I didn't, because I didn't want to get distracted. I wanted to stay focused on Clarity Flow. But now that I'm looking at 2024, is like, okay, I want to get serious about growing an audience. I think I can grow an audience in this space. I already have a little bit of a starting point there. Then it sort of comes down to like a decision between like which channel to get serious about. And one thing that I've been doing a lot of like sort of learning in general about like the science of growing an audience is there are these discovery channels versus relationship channels. And okay. So a relationship channel would be like our podcast, or my other podcast, Open Threads, or my email newsletter.
Okay.
Right? Those are relationship channels where somebody who already follows me is subscribed, and we can go deep and gets to know me and my content, and we develop this relationship long term.
Right. It's unlikely that someone discovers you by typing in your podcast name into Spotify and starting to listen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Discovery channels.
The discovery comes first.
Discovery channels are where you grow the audience. You gain exposure to more and more people at scale on a regular basis. And so,
okay. And is that what we see people doing from their long form content and turning it into snippets and putting it into different discovery platforms?
Yeah. I mean, discovery platforms are your social media platforms. So like Twitter,
your boredom platforms, Instagram. Yeah,
Instagram, and then YouTube is very, and so when I assess all these channels, right, like I can go hard on Twitter, or I can go hard on like LinkedIn, or I can go hard on like Medium, or even like SEO and like blogging. But YouTube is the one that I see has the most direct potential to grow, and I think sort of plays to my strengths. If I need a lot of like effort to put into it. It's a lot of time investment and a lot of work into quality and connecting with an audience. But the whole idea behind any discovery channel, discovery platform, is the more effort that you put into not only just production quality, but like topic and connection with a potential audience, the platform rewards you with serving you up to their audience through their algorithm. Okay. YouTube does that. Twitter does that. LinkedIn does that. You know, it's just a matter of like which one plays to your strengths and which one do you see as the fastest way to grow audience numbers. And
this is what we see our friend Aaron Francis doing on Twitter and talking about it publicly and saying, okay, I'm investing effort, money, time into the production quality of my videos. How I do screencasts, what my camera looks like, my equipment, the background, because I see him sharing a lot of the results. He's actually focused on his YouTube channel, but he's talking about it on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. And okay. That's sort of what I'm thinking as well. Like the thing is, I haven't started putting effort into this yet. I'm more in like the research mode, mm-hmm. learning mode right now. But
you kind of have to understand it before you start.
I have to understand it. I'm going to be investing in my office and everything, and like, mm-hmm. But I do see a lot of potential on YouTube. I mean, it's nothing new. Obviously, it's been around forever. But the creator, economy or like algorithm system on YouTube just seems so optimal for growth. If you can get really comfortable in video, which I've done some video work mm-hmm. several times in my career, and I've got a little bit of a starting point on my channel. It's not much, but I think it's something to build on. And especially if you can focus on topic and connection first, and like how you package your content ideas.
Okay. Obviously YouTube is as wide of a channel as it gets when it comes to topics, but it does need to match, right? The topic with the audience. Like if I were a chef and I wanted to grow an audience around my cooking, TikTok and Instagram is where I should live. Maybe YouTube also, but do you feel a good direct connection between the people and the audience and the content and like
I
the
do produce? I do. Yeah. And I think that, part of it is just going to be getting into the rhythm of producing videos every week. And then as I get into more volume, then I can start to see where the points of what's resonating, what's actually tracking and producing results, and then just keep iterating and improving on that. But there definitely is already evidence of like, there's a massive space on YouTube for like coding and programming and software development and design and tooling and building software products. That's a huge area on YouTube with a ton of activity. Same thing with like startups and business and bootstrapping and venture and marketing in general. That's also a big area. But you know, different pockets have like different gaps. And I see, you know, I've been doing a lot of research in these kind of spaces, and that's where I'm going to be kind of focusing a lot of effort. But like one other concept that I'm getting kind of excited about as I think more about it is the idea of treating every single video or even every single like tweet, if you will, or blog post, but I'm thinking a lot more about video right now, treat every single one like its own little product. Like your every time you're planning a new video, even if it's a new one every single week, you got to think about it like, who is this product for? Who's the target customer? What problem does it solve for them? How do we attract them with a good thumbnail and a good positioning and a good hook? How do we keep them? How do we like activate them and keep them without hitting the back button? You know, how do we actually deliver on the promise of what this video is all about? Like, that's how it needs to work when you're producing content as it, like, I'm thinking about it. Like, if this were a full-time job, what kind of like playbook would you need to run? And that's what that would sort of look like, you know? So anyway, like that I think is where a lot of my effort and energy is going to start going into in 2024. It's like, first, like, get some coaching clients in the door. Second, start to build, get the audience engine back up and running. That'll be a sort of a long-term ongoing effort. And then third is like develop multiple revenue streams, right? So transition from just like coaching revenue into things that come about when you have a growing audience, right? So I think courses is the obvious one, but I'm actually less mm-hmm. interested in doing courses. I'm more interested in maybe getting into some sort of community product, like a tight, small, limited number membership group. Coupling that with like some small conference events. So that would be one potential idea for a revenue product at some point. Another one that obviously comes about when you have a growing audience would be sponsorships, like direct sponsorships, especially on YouTube. That could be another channel of revenue. And maybe some form of courses, like technical teaching courses could come about as well. I don't know like when these things would come about, maybe later sometime next year, but it's like, again, like boiling it down, like step one, quick, fast revenue with coaching. Step two, like focus on audience. Step three, like expand into other revenue areas, you know, that's it.
Okay. I'm interested. I have FOMO because I have no other option but to focus on what I'm doing. And I think these days there's a lot of FOMO out there because there's just a bunch of interesting things happening.
Yeah.
The ability to build audience, these different types of channels, different ways to monetize. I feel like I read a post about paid communities pretty recently, coaching tried and true, the cohort type of coaching. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I want to learn from you.
I've been really going deep on Jay Klaus's content, and I just spoke to him on my other podcast.
I remember talking to him. He's really good at it.
Yeah. He's got his site is called Creator Science.
Yes, and that's right.
I think like from a distance, a lot of this like creator content or creator education seems like, oh, that's so obvious or simple or not interesting. But like, once I started getting into it, especially his stuff, like he's really good at breaking it down and having like really more advanced insights and experts talking about how this stuff fits together. So I've been really enjoying his stuff. I wanted to say one more thing. I guess like, again, there's just like you were talking about like FOMO and everything. Going back to like Clarity Flow, again, all this effort that I just described is really about getting to a place where I can keep sustaining Clarity Flow long term, you know, but removing the urgency and getting into like the opportunity to just build a more valuable business without just resorting to like straight consulting or getting a part-time remote job or something like that mm-hmm. to pay the bills. Like that will be fine just to earn an income, but like I got to stay in the game earning an income is not enough. It has to be, you know, earn profit now, but you have to be building for the long term, like assets that can grow, you know?
Yeah, there's the portfolio type mentality or approach.
Yep.
Because some things are meant for immediate revenue and some things are meant for longer term value.
Yep.
Well,
what do you got going on, dude?
So I'm very excited about a transition that is underway where I am going to be moving my focus away from the sales process. Well, me being the sales process and being the AE and sitting in that seat, and moving toward a combination of marketing and partnerships and investor relations, let's say. Mm-hmm. So our first AE is starting next week on Monday. And then the second AE, so AE equals account executive, basically salesperson, starts on November 20th. So a week from Monday. So within the next 10 days, we'll have two salespeople on board. And then I'll see the go-to-market team as complete in the sense that there are people in every seat. We have two people at the SDR seats. That's to go out and generate opportunities. We have two account executives that do their own prospecting in addition to the SDRs. And the goal there is they get so busy into the sales process that they stop doing their own prospecting, and then everyone can focus. So the SDRs can focus on prospecting while the AEs focus on deals. Mm. We have a partnerships person. We have like a someone on customer success that has a lot of experience in the sales process. And then we have like a sales leader in the consultant, G. Mm-hmm. And then all those people will be far better at those jobs than I am. So it makes sense for us to basically bring in professionals, and then I can start to move my focus elsewhere. So for the last 6 months, it's really been at the individual contributor level of doing demos, doing deals, trying to get things closed, moving things forward. And I'm not a pro at that.
Yeah. That was a good breakdown of all the different roles. So is there like a manager or like leader of that whole like department of the business, or is that basically you still?
Like, so it's a combination.
You're putting the people like the AEs and the SDRs like in the places and
yeah. So it did not make sense to me to bring in someone at the management level there, because we need individual contribution. We need deals. We need prospects and opportunities and deals and partnerships and leads and all that stuff. And it is important for that team to be able to look up to someone for guidance, help, questions, coordination, communication, all that stuff. And it's really a combination. I'm the person they report to directly, but G, the consultant, has a lot more sales experience. So that's almost like their sales leader when they're like,
I like this approach. I think we talked about this like months ago when you were going through it a little bit, but don't hire the manager first, hire the frontline people first.
Yes.
And then build the engine, and then, you know, bring in the leadership later on, you know?
Yep.
Or
yep.
Maybe somebody raises to the leadership.
That's exactly right. So in the interviewing process, it was very, very clear that we are looking for people to come in, because we met a lot of people who were very accomplished and much more suitable for like a VP of sales role. And some of them were really good and also very convincing that they can jump into the individual contribution role and do deals and then move up to management later. But I was worried to bring in anyone who hasn't like been actively selling, right? Like the people that we hired like 2 weeks ago were selling somewhere else. Like, this is what they do. They are at that level. They're hungry. They want to crush.
And I mean, ultimately, like what's even like the thing that they would need from a leader is like market positioning, like what you know about the customer and the product and the opportunity. And that's you. Like you know that better than anyone, right? Like,
there's a combination.
Like bringing in an outside leader, and then you've got like the expertise in the process from G, but the bringing in an outside leader, I think, would be more valuable after the ship is up and running and they can come in and find ways to improve. But
and that's really the focus of the next 12 months is to prove that we have the ability to effectively pay salespeople X and have them bring in 4X in ARR. Mm-hmm. That's effectively the argument to be made to the capital markets, to investors, is the product works, people stick around, they're getting value from it. We can go to market, we can close deals in this way with these numbers. Therefore, if you just add more salespeople and more resources, then more growth. And the enterprise value of that growth is more valuable than the dollars invested in, therefore, good return. Now, there is a combination of things that are needed from those people. A lot of it is, for me, Jordan, where do we want to aim? We don't want to go from a million a year to a billion a year and on every platform, no matter what, and say yes to everybody. That's like a recipe for a mess. Mm-hmm. So where should we look? Why? How's our relationship with Salesforce? So there's a lot of things there. Do we want to go after the marketing team? Do we want to talk to the tech team? How do we position this? What should our outbound messaging say? Like, what should we experiment with next? But there are also sales situations that require experience, and that's where I'm lacking and where GE is extremely useful. So sometimes you will get into a position where you kind of have to make a choice. You have to make a decision on what to do next. What should our proposal be? I remember this. I screwed it up with a great merchant. They were doing $100 million a year, and I didn't quite know what to do. And I felt good about the confidence to make a big offer. And I put out a big number. And it felt awesome that the company was at a place that we were willing to make that offer at that much money. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know, because I don't have the experience, is, you know what's much easier? Put it below 250K a year and you'll get approval much more easily. And you worry about getting to that big number 2-3 years from today.
Yeah.
I just didn't know that. So there are a lot of things like that that come up that is really useful to have someone who just has a lot more experience than I do with enterprise sales.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Sure.
But what I'm excited about is the ability to focus on, you know, I say marketing, but it's really marketing with a lever. And that lever is this new marketing agency that we brought on.
Yeah, you were talking about like the content.
Yes. Stuff,
like what's happening over there?
Well, this is the first time that we're working with a full service agency that has 200 people. So,
oh, wow.
Yes. So they, right. It's like good and bad, right? Like their onboarding sheets. I sent them over to Rock and he was like, tell these people to never ask us for a password in a Google Doc ever again. Like, wow. You know, that's fair. That's fair. You know?
Yeah.
So that's a fair criticism. But it's also true that when I go to them and I say, hey, can you help us with X? Their answer is, we have a team that does that. Let me introduce you to the right person. Mm-hmm. So I am excited to be able to like flex in these different areas around like, we're going to do a campaign around this new feature. Let's create a video, write a blog post, and launch 4 ads on LinkedIn, all talking about the video that all leads back to a landing page. Can you build all of those for us? Yes, let's do that.
Yeah. So they handle all the creative, all of that.
Like, yes. Yes. So, and they're like an augmentation. So we have a great designer. And if we want to say, hey, we'll handle the landing page, you do everything else, then we can do that. Or we can just say, you just do everything because it makes sense for right now.
Are there like certain channels or like these campaigns, like, is there like, all right, this quarter, we're focusing on this campaign or this channel. And then how are you organizing the experiments, if you will?
Yeah, the organizing force is an account-based approach. And so it really starts from our account target lists, right? It's not let's go wide and see who comes into the funnel. It's not that at all.
It's like these 100 accounts are perfect.
Yes.
Where are they having to reach them?
Yeah. That's right. Here are these 6,000 companies, right, between BigCommerce and Adobe Commerce and Salesforce Commerce Cloud. And we are working with a company that does research. So we send that list and then they qualify, like, is it what we think it is? Is it US based? Is it US dollars? Is it predominantly e-commerce? Just to confirm that we're going after the right people. Then they'll go off and find 5 or 6 individual people involved in those companies. And then that ends up as the basis for our marketing targeting. Mm-hmm. So in LinkedIn, you can upload lists of emails and say, these are the people that we want to see ads. And that's it. So it's an account-based approach to the marketing, because the only goal is to get them into the pipeline and into the opportunities and into the sales process. So we don't want anyone jumping into the sales process. That makes no sense for us.
Right.
Of course, it will happen in some inbound and out of, you know, random stuff. And you go to a panel on a conference and people will just come in, but the marketing dollars spent have a like a finite circle that the targets are all in.
And like, I guess like the SDRs, they stay in sync with what's happening on marketing. Like, all right, so these accounts are seeing ads this month, so they should be receiving some outreach.
Like, so that feels like where it is my job to coordinate, because in the ideal sense, SDRs, right, I just had the SDR stand up. Looks like we have one on Monday, we have one on Friday. So on Monday, we say, all right, here are our goals. On Friday, we say, how do we do? So on Friday, right now, I got some information that one of the campaigns is getting good feedback, which means responses. And it happens to be a campaign focused on offering a video. This is what we do. Would you like me to send you a quick video showing you how your checkout would look? Mm-hmm. And people are like, okay, I'll see the video. You know, to me, that's an experiment and it sounds like a little opening. All right, a little glimmer of light. Maybe we should walk through it.
Yep.
So let's go with that example. Let's say that works. And next week we do another few hundred emails about that and we get a 5% response rate. And each video takes 5 minutes and it's not a big deal. And then all of a sudden, hey, that gets people into the, okay. So let's just say we get that bit of information from the SDR team. That information needs to be distributed to the AEs. So that when they're in conversation, maybe they should go forward with, hey, we'll put together a quick, 5-minute video for you. And then what it needs to leap out of our company and over to the marketing agency and say, hey, this messaging is working. Let's run ads showing videos of other people's checkouts and then making the offer. Do you want your own checkout video? Click here.
Yep.
Right. Random example, but like, that coordination ideally all comes together. Yeah,
like those resources are all like there ready to, ready to produce when you need them.
Right. And if, for example, it has to flow the other way also, if the LinkedIn ad that offers a very harsh critique of how awful old checkouts are, if that is resonating, then we should experiment with that in our SDR messaging as well, because it's the same people. Yep. It's the same 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So if we can find a right approach to our messaging and our positioning, then it should spread itself out through all of our efforts and ideally continue to work. So that's like the general approach to the marketing.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, yep. since we've like niched down on coaches for Clarity Flow, the two channels that we have campaigns running in, one is cold email outreach and the other is SEO. And it just makes it so much easier when you know exactly who is a perfect fit for this product, and what they look like and literally where to find them. And we're doing that example there is exactly what we're doing essentially with cold outreach. It's like we have lists of coaches and we're sending them outreach messages. And do you want a quick video to show you Clarity Flow? And
funny. Essentially, yeah. When I think of coaching, there's oh man, I don't remember the guy's name, Russ something. He's kind of a, I don't know how to describe it, aggressive marketer.
What's
very, very good at it. Clients Evans? On demand or something like that.
Yeah.
Yep. Russ something or other. But I there's a lot to learn from his marketing. It's really good. It's not like my style, but he's really good at it.
Yep. Yep. Same thing with the SEO thing. We've got a whole new approach where we're getting more into like programmatic SEO we've been doing stuff with AI and content. Now we're really starting to dial it in because like you can build like a tree of keywords that just stack down from like category to subcategory plus specificity and then use case and job to be done and all these things like map to specific keywords that we can just sort of like generate a bunch of content around. So we're doing a big effort there and working through like piecing together the engine for that so that I can hand it off to my VA to keep it running.
Okay.
It's been actually pretty like fascinating technically to see how that stuff comes together. And that's the current marketing like the cold outreach is now up and running. So I'm my only input is just like checking the results on that. The SEO is sort of the project, the marketing project that I'm like giving input on this month and next month. And then that should be like sort of up and running with my VA by January.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Oh, what else you seen out there? Are you interested in buying an AI wearable?
Everybody keeps talking about how ridiculous this video was, and I haven't even watched it yet. I want to watch it.
I didn't like the video. It looks cool, but I guess maybe I'm joining the criticism. if anything, I like the ambition, but I'm a little confused in general. But what I like is the new form factor. Like,
all I understand from a distant surface level, I haven't really looked at it yet. It's a pin that is it their own AI service, or is it connecting to like ChatGPT and the other ones?
I think it's their own. It looks like it's like a wearable Alexa. Like, I don't kind of see the point. Like, you can ask it questions like you can other devices. But what I like is the interaction that happens on your hand. So you hold your hand out in front of you and it projects out an image onto your hand. So I'm showing my hand on Zoom as if anyone can see it. But on your hand, you can see, let's just say you listen to music, like the pause button's in the middle of your hand, and then you can like move your right finger to go forward or your thumb to like go back. Right. So it is interesting in that way, where it is a new way
interact
with tech that you're wearing, and you're not on a screen and you don't click a button. Like that part's cool.
I guess I'm excited about the innovation in terms of the interface, but I don't see the problem that it's solving. I mean, either you can hold the play button in your hand with your iPhone, or you can do it from your Apple Watch, or, you know, soon enough, it'll be much more like voice. You can do it voice activated. Like,
yeah.
I don't see.
Yeah, where's it going? I don't know. I don't know if there are business applications. I don't know.
And even like Alexa, and I never use Siri, but like, you know, we've got a little Alexa, and now it's sitting. It hasn't left our drawer for like 2 years. Like, we just don't like. All right, you can use it to like set a timer and play a song, but do I need AI everywhere in my life all the time? I don't know. You know. I feel like the big opportunity with AI is in work. Like, I use it every day at work, like on my computer, when I'm looking at my computer, when I'm working in code, or when I'm creating something. That's where AI is a monster game changer. But like, at that point, I'm already interacting with my computer. I don't need a pin to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I have no idea where it's all going. I was on a panel last week. I went to Austin, interesting city, and every freaking question was about AI. And I want to be like, guys, there is no AI. What are we doing here? What are we talking about? But I was up there with like people from like big corporates, like Southwest Airlines and so on. Yeah. They're just enamored, obsessed.
There is an obsession. And I see it in every single product that I ever... you and I are talking right now on Zoom, and I see a new little button. I just noticed it the other day. It says AI Companion. I don't know what that does, but
I click it. See what happens. Someone else shows up. Hey, guys.
Yep. Like, every single product is trying to embed AI. And sometimes it's cool and innovative, but sometimes it's just like... This is like, I think every company is trying to race so hard to becoming like an AI tool that it's like, all right, it still has to be useful and it still has to fit my use case, you know, like.
And make it better.
Yeah.
And easier, more effect, something. Yeah, I called it a marketing arms race on the panel. I was like, in software land, everyone just is saying the words AI. And then if you're a software company that isn't saying it, you feel like you're getting left behind. But you know, there's no AI in Rally, guys. There's none there. what are we talking about?
Yeah.
But we'll see where it goes.
I was looking at I opened up a Google Doc yesterday. And at the top of the Google Doc, but you know, it's a blank page. At the top, it floats something like right into the middle of the page, like in the content area. It was two or three buttons. One button was write an email. The other button was write meeting notes, make an agenda. I forgot if there was even a third button, but I was sitting there. I was like, I don't want to do either of those things. I want to write a Google Doc about something else. Like, why are you forcing me to use AI for some specific use case that like, I did not ask for this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of weird.
But here's the thing.
I just see examples of that everywhere now. You know, like,
okay,
like
okay.
Click the AI button to do this thing. That's all right. Well, I didn't really ask to do that.
Okay. I'm just going to contradict myself 180 degrees for a sec. Okay. As I am very focused and very committed to Rally, my FOMO, a lot of the FOMO is driven by the growth of AI companies, not the OpenAI. God bless them. You know, that's beautiful what they're doing. It's amazing. And I must say, it's
pretty. I did watch the Sam Altman keynote, and it's pretty exciting to me right now to see. This is the first company, I think, since Apple and Steve Jobs, where everyone sort of pays attention to their keynote.
Yes. You know, it's cool. Like
Google and Amazon and Microsoft, I'm sure they all have their own keynote events, but nobody cares.
Old and boring and horrible and risk averse and all the things that you expect.
This one, like, everyone's excited to see what they announced. And they announced some pretty cool stuff this week. You know?
Yeah. And right. And it's not like this disappointing, like, roll your eyes thing.
Yeah. All right. But tell me about your FOMO. What do you want to do?
Like that moment of him just like putting together a custom GPT in like 4 minutes, you're like, okay. That's gangster right there. So those companies are cool. But as like an individual, like, you know, hanging out on Twitter in between work, the combination of like bootstrap, like maybe solo founder, that mindset combined with these AI tools is really freaking interesting. So I see, you know, speaking of creators, Josh Pigford still at it. Fountain of
throwing energy. Stuff at the wall. I love it.
I mean, right. He's going at it. Zero shame about backtracking this. And I do respect it. I
love it. I'm a fan.
Yes. Yes. So we talked about like the difficulty that we find ourselves in once we start saying things publicly and you want to like, you're worried about what people think. Josh is like fucking YOLO. Let's just go. And it's beautiful. So what he's doing with Detangle, I don't know if it's going to work. I hope it really works. If it does work, these like 1, 2, 3 person companies are growing much faster than normal software companies.
Yes.
And that's interesting. From a not change the world $1 billion exit thing, but to make a multi-million dollar software company with a handful of people remotely work wherever you want. Like if that's the new version of the 4-hour work week, sign me up. That's pretty damn interesting.
I don't think like just putting a very basic wrapper on AI APIs is enough to say like you're going to have a fast growing SaaS business. You still have to have distribution. You still have to literally be solving a painful problem for a target customer. Like that has to be true. But I definitely don't agree with the widespread criticism of these like AI SaaS tools that you see on Twitter. Like they're like, oh, it's just an AI wrapper OpenAI just announced some stuff. I guess they just killed off all these SaaS companies. Isn't that funny? Ha ha. Meanwhile, those behind the scenes, they're growing like crazy MRR and like, because their customers don't know anything about Sam Altman's keynote. They're just lawyers who want to buy a solution to read their documents, you know?
Yes. Amen. Amen. That to me sounds like a great opportunity. I always look at this stuff as a non-technical person. And in that scenario, you do want to take tech and translate it over to non-technical people that don't know about OpenAI and don't care who Sam Altman is and don't care about some new feature in ChatGPT. They just know that for $99 a month, their job is made easier and better.
Yep.
That's it. And then if the launch of features and the press around it generates more search for the same category, you still win.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not venture fundable and it's going to be amazing and you're not, you don't have a moat and all the other bullshit terms, but you can make some money.
You could.
Yep. I like
it. And you can even still build a small SaaS that has value in itself that can also be sold for many founders, a life-changing sum of money.
You know? Yep. Yeah. I was going to say a lot of us forget what that means. I think people who listen to this podcast, they know $5 million change your life, my friends.
Absolutely, it does.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, in terms of that FOMO, like for me, I don't wish that I was doing like an AI SaaS instead of Clarity Flow right now. But I do have the FOMO of essentially like what Josh Pigford does and anyone else who has the financial space and freedom to be able to go tinker.
The exploration.
To be able to go explore and tinker at will. I don't have that right now because I have to.
Yeah.
Currently, this month, I'm focusing on Clarity Flow, but next year, it's about like reestablish the income and get back on a good footing as an entrepreneur. But once you have that as a self-funded, bootstrapped entrepreneur, and you're technical, and you can build products, like you can take a week or two to go tinker with something and see what it's all about, and put out a little side product. Mm-hmm. You know, just for the hell of it, because you have the time and space and financial, sustainability to be able to do those things. And then you never know. Like that's like you look at someone like him, and I fucking hate these debates over like, oh, you have to focus on one thing versus having a portfolio or splitting your focus, this and that. Like you don't have to do anything, but B, like you look at. Each person has their own history of like their own personal history of wins and losses. And you look at something like Josh, like one of his little side tinkerings, explorations among a long list of them for him, one of them turned into Bare Metrics, you know, like, and you just never know when one of these things is going to sort of really hit a nerve at exactly the right time. And putting all your eggs in a single SaaS basket in the name of like, oh, you have to focus on one for, you know, like some of that is just so painfully obvious, but it leaves out like personal experience and circumstance of where you're at. And anyway, I'll stop that rant right there. So
I hear you. All right, homie, it's time.
All right, dude. Yeah.
Friday. It's time for a Paloma.
Yeah, I'm going to get into the weekend. I'm going to bring my daughter to her first Knicks game at Madison Square Garden this weekend.
Ooh, that's fun. Nice. Yeah. We went to see Hamilton last week.
Oh, did you?
So beautiful. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I only saw the one on TV and on Disney, but it looked like it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's beautiful because it's the play, right? It's not like some dramatization movie thing. It's really just the play. But seeing it in person was beautiful. It was the antidote to all the horrible stuff that we are seeing in the world. It was beauty and art and history and music. And I was like, I was in heaven there with the kids.
That's great. I have so many great memories of like going to MSG and watching the Knicks in the 90s. And like, those are some of my favorite all time sports memories. And I just think that building is pretty magical for sports.
Yeah.
I'm pretty psyched. It is cool. And she's like playing basketball in a league. And yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. So, yeah. When you have multiple kids, the experiences like one-on-one are rare.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing, man.
You try to do like dates?
Yeah, we do dates and we do, this one's just going to be a day trip into the city, but one thing that I try to do with both my kids at least once or twice a year is take each of them on an individual like overnight trip somewhere.
Like an outing?
Yeah.
Cool. That's fun. Yeah, it's tough with three. it's a lot. We're starting to do once a week. Regan and I go out with one of the girls.
Oh,
and then the other two get to stay home and hang out and, you know, play video games. So everyone's happy and everyone knows that they have something coming up like the next week.
That's great.
Tonight, my wife is going out with her friends, which means I get a party night with the girls.
There you go. You know,
get some takeout and watch a movie.
Beautiful.
Good stuff. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. Later, folks.